On this week's program, we have rare bipartisan agreement on property taxes. We'll also hear about a continuation of corruption at the state's flagship university. We sit down and talk to Ted Cruz's pollster and do a deep dive on what goes into a good and a bad poll. And Michael Quinn Sullivan closes us out with a commentary on left-wing bully tactics. Welcome back to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, here in the 1836 studios. I want to get started with this week's news. For that, we're going to go up to Ross Kessig in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Ross, you have found the elusive issues that there's bipartisan agreement on, believe it or not. Tell us about it.
Yeah, there's a whole host of issues that both parties agree on when you look at their party platforms. And there's one that's really interesting that's near and dear to Texans is, making the property tax system more fair and less complicated.
Yeah. So a couple of big reforms you identified in both party platform, Texas Democratic Party platform, Republican Party platforms, is eliminating, people are maybe not so familiar with this, it's these corporate handouts called 313 agreements, and then also getting rid of Robinhood. So let's talk a little bit about 313 agreements. So people may not be familiar with this, but they ought to be, because this is something I feel like we all kind of ought to get on the same page for in the upcoming session.
Yeah, so Chapter 313, property tax abatements. Most people are familiar with cities giving property tax abatements, and tax abatements are where, like, a commercial business doesn't pay taxes on the whole property's value.
Yeah, it's a handout. Basically, there's some business wants to come to the city, and they say, hey, here's some goodies, and we're not going to give you cash, but we're going to give you this abatement on your property taxes to locate to our city.
Right. And so most people know that cities give those away, but what they don't know is Chapter 313 actually allows school districts to hand out property tax abatements. And you can actually go on the comptroller's website and see a whole list of all the school districts in Texas that have given certain property taxpayers these carve-outs. And the state actually has to pick up the tab for them.
Craziest part of this whole thing. And I mean, the first thing here is, you kind of get it. Cities exist for a lot of reasons. I mean, cities run stores and do all kind of different things. And I guess, if we're going to have government in the world of economic development, big mistake in my opinion. But, if we're going to be doing it, it makes almost sense that cities would. But school boards are supposed to be about educating kids, right? They're not about, the purpose of a school board is not economic development and bringing businesses to town and that kind of thing. That's a distraction from educating the kids. Yet we're putting them in the driver's seat on this. But then the crazy thing is they don't have to pay. They give the abatement and then the state comes in and reimburses them.
Yeah, I think that's why the Democrats oppose them, is because, it's money that could be going to education from local taxpayers. And it's also just unfair, and which is why I think Republicans also don't support the tax abatements, is because, you're not making these people pay under the guise of economic development, but then that burden of taxes just gets shifted onto other property taxpayers.
Right.
And people are being taxed out of their homes, their tax bills are going up way faster than inflation, way faster than they can afford to pay them. And so why are we allowing school districts to, like, pick and choose which companies don't have to pay property taxes? It's ludicrous.
Just totally crazy. And it's good to see the parties agreeing on this. A huge price tag on it. And I think I've seen numbers as high as $5 billion a year, or at least maybe a biennium. But huge price tag on it compared to what we spend on lots of other things. So let's talk about the other item. People may be more familiar with Robinhood, but maybe they don't know what that is. So tell listeners kind of what it is and the fact that the parties agree on it. That's kind of neat.
Sure. So Robinhood redistributes property tax revenue from one district to another. And the reason for it is everyone pays about the same property tax rate, the school property tax rate, but the property taxes, the tax bases vary a lot from, Dallas to South Texas to Plano to Houston. And so in order to equalize the revenue that comes in, the Robinhood system, which the state imposed, actually overtaxes people in certain areas, in what they call, property-rich areas, and then it redistributes some of that money to property-poor areas. and both parties don't like the system, at least in their platforms. And obviously the system's incredibly unpopular with Texans because it's complicated, it's unfair, you know, it kind of punishes people in certain areas to make up for the revenue shortfalls in other areas. And, you know, the alternative is to just have the state make up those revenue imbalances rather than just punishing taxpayers through this convoluted system.
Well, and that's we had an interview on the program a few weeks back, Texas Public Policy Foundation out saying, hey, look, if we just restrain spending at the state level, we can do away with this Robin Hood tax. We can have the state pay for schools the way it's supposed to be, not, you know, with this weird locally collected, centrally administered property tax system that we have right now.
Yeah, so Robin Hood overtaxed Texans by about $2 billion this last year in 2018. So they collected about $2.1 billion in Robin Hood recapture taxes that were taken from one district and given to another. And due to the economic growth in Texas, you know, the comptroller is revising revenue estimates, and the state is planning to get, you know, more than that in a surplus.
Yeah,
you know, and so
we just need to do
surplus. We could just get rid of Robin Hood, at least for the current, you know, biennium or whatever.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the parties are agreeing. Well, I appreciate your reporting on it. Thanks for finding some areas of agreement amongst Texans of different political stripes.
Yeah, we'll see if they can actually get it done in 2019.
Now let's turn to Carrie Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Carrie, you've been writing about it. The University of Texas system has named a sole finalist to be its new chancellor. Lots of problems there.
That's right, Tony. James B. Milliken, former chancellor of City of New York University, named as the sole finalist for the top post at the University of Texas. Very concerning given all the previous shenanigans that happened at the state university, and very concerning given James Milliken's own past.
Yeah, so this is a guy coming from New York City and was under investigation there for crookedness and corruption.
That's right, Tony. Under investigation there for misappropriating public funds, had a number of allies resign, all in the administration over there. He said that he was resigning due to health issues, of which there is cause for concern, but he also had state and federal prosecutors looking over his shoulder. And now he might be coming to Austin, to the University of Texas, which has had its own corrupt and malfeasance problems over the past decade at least, with legislators using their influence to gain admission of certain students and of a forgivable loan, aka bribe scandal, in the law school foundation. It seems as though the UT Politburo was uncontent to find someone who just promised to look the other way as they were engaging in malfeasance, but someone who had a demonstrated record of looking the other way.
Yeah, so, I mean, seriously, as we look back over this, this goes back to the Wallace Hall situation over the last few years, where you had a good regent stepping forward, asking for documents, investigating what was going on at the university, and saying, hey, there are problems here, and I need answers, and being completely stonewalled in that process. And, you know, he was run off the board. Governor Abbott made some very bad appointments to the Board of Regents, who have not only, you know, stopped all of the investigation of the corruption in the admission system, they've codified it since then.
Well, yeah, and while Wallace Hall was successful in perhaps pressuring Bill Powers, the president of UT, out, his right-hand man, Greg Fenves, took his place.
Yeah, this is the junior guy is just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, basically.
That's absolutely right, and it's really a travesty, the amount of shenanigans that have gone on over there and the failure of willingness to confront those issues, even by the governor of the state of Texas. You know, you look at the regents that are there right now, not exactly inspiring confidence in Texas taxpayers, students, or alumni.
Well, I think listeners need to go check out Carrie's article up, TexasScorecard.com. This guy Milliken, lots of problems up in New York. It'll be interesting to see if the Board of Regents can get by with this or if they'll be held to account.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At TexasScorecard.com or EmpowerTexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at EmpowerTexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to have on the program this week Chris Wilson with WPA Intelligence, Ted Cruz's pollster, the expert on the numbers for the Cruz campaign. Thanks for coming on the program.
You bet. I'm happy to do it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So, you know, I saw you tweeting a little bit a week or so ago about this Texas Lyceum poll. This is a poll that comes out every year. It's a kind of group of cosmopolitan types in Texas who put out a poll about various issues and historically been kind of flawed whenever it comes to candidate polling, that kind of thing. And you were poking at some of the problems with it. And I thought, you know, I really ought to have Chris on to talk about, you know, what really goes into polling. How does this work? Because people see so many polls out there and they just kind of, I don't know, at this point, sometimes it's just kind of, you just ignore it because it's so much noise. But what were some, let's use this Lyceum poll kind of as an example. What were some of the problems that you saw as a professional pollster? And obviously the headline on that poll was, hey, Cruz is not doing so good. You're Cruz's guy. You're saying, no, there's a lot of problems with this poll. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that. And then go into polling a little bit more generally. But, yeah, tell me what was wrong with this Lyceum poll?
Well, the Lyceum poll is one that's just really particularly bad. It's what they I'll give you some history on it because it has varied. And one of the key things on survey research is who you're talking to.
Right.
Are you talking to adults, of which only about somewhere 8 in 10, depending on the state, in Texas a little bit less than that, are even registered to vote. And some people do surveys of adults. So you got to figure one in five of those are not even registered to vote. Then are you just talking to registered voters? Well, in a state like Texas, the election day percentage turnout is going to be somewhere in the range of 35 to 45% of registered voters. So if they're talking to registered voters, which is what the Lyceum poll does historically, that means somewhere in the 55 to 65% range of the people they're interviewing aren't going to vote on election day. So that means of their survey, only one in three to a little bit less than half are even going to actually cast a ballot. So from that, then you've got to drill down into what about simple things like Republicans and Democrats? And that's where I really take issue with the Lyceum survey and a lot of the surveys that are done in Texas, because as you know, Texas does not register by party. To put it in comparison, Oklahoma, it's really easy, a lot easier to do a survey because when you go and register to vote, you choose your party. Are you Republican or Democrat? So it doesn't really change. But in Texas, I could wake up today and feel like I'm a Republican, and maybe Republicans spend too much and I get angry and I decide tomorrow I'm a Libertarian, and then I come back to being a Republican again. I mean, it's just a state of mind when it gets down to it.
Right.
So you have to ask people that. And the Lyceum survey, independents, let's just start there, because there aren't very many independents in Texas. Most people like to pick a side. It's sort of like, you know, it's either A&M or UT, right? It's like the same thing with Republicans or Democrats.
Right.
And Lyceum is that independents range from 12 to 46% in their surveys. This one fell in the middle of that. Democrats have ranged from 22
well, hold on.
To
let me,
44.
Let me stop you there. So they were okay. saying in one of their polls, they were saying that Texas composed 46% of the people that they're asking are 46% of them are independents?
That's correct. That is that was a recent survey. And, yeah, it's really outlandish would probably be too kind a word to put it, a way to put it. And like I said, this one was in the middle. It was in the mid-30s. But even at that rate is really high. I can just tell you in our surveys, independents we have on a low of 20 to a high of 25. You're never going to see them exceed 25%. And yes, we do cap it because it is it's important from a not trying to use pollster speak. It's important from a representative standpoint that we don't have independents represent too much. So if we're capping it at 25%, but it's ranging from 20 to 25 because, you know, yesterday I was Libertarian, today I'm Republican, tomorrow I might be an independent. But it's not going to make up more than 25% of the people who turn out on election day. And so, yes, they had almost double that in a recent survey they had.
Well,
so
if I can ask a question on that, you know, in my experience, whenever I meet people who say they're an independent, they're really a Republican or they're really a Democrat, but they just kind of want to be they want to say, well, I have an open mind, right?
Well, and that's so
it's,
right.
And that's kind of, it's exactly not a really right. an identity. It's more of a mask.
And an independent in Texas is very different than an independent in California or an independent in New York or even an independent in Alabama. I mean, they just are, have a different state of mind, because I would make the argument that when we look at independents in Texas, they are conservative. They are regular churchgoers. They tend to vote Republican about a rate of three to two, I'd say, from an overall standpoint.
Sure.
So whenever I look at independents, if I'm not, and you mentioned I do work for Senator Cruz, I also do Governor Abbott's polling, and if my clients aren't getting two-thirds to more than half to two-thirds of the independent vote, I start to get concerned.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. But so that's part of the problem is selecting the independents, but there's kind of other issues with this Lyceum poll, and it's true of other polls. So let's kind of keep going and talk about, drill down some of these issues.
Well, the Democrats Republican is probably the most important one and the most glaring one. And in almost every Lyceum poll, they sample an equal number of Democrats to Republicans. Now, it ranges a lot. Sometimes Democrats are sampled at a much higher level. This one was almost exactly the same percentage of Republicans to Democrats. And again, that is just wrong.
Right.
Republicans will make up on election day of 2018, they will make up 37% to 40% of the electorate. It won't be below 37, it won't be above 40. And Democrats will make up between 28 and 31. Same thing. It won't be below 28. It will not be above 31. So that's a range of a minimum of 6 points for a Republican edge to a maximum of 12 points Republican edge. Somewhere in the middle lies the truth. And that's really the only variance that you're going to have, is 6 to 8 edge. And these Lyceum polls continually sample Republicans and Democrats at the exact same number. And
yeah.
That's just, it's absurd. There is I think I went back and looked, I think, because one of the pollsters from the Lyceum kind of came back at me in the Dallas Morning News, and I went and looked. The last time Republicans and Democrats had voted at the same level at the same percentage, I believe, I can't remember now, so it may be wrong, it was 1990 or 1992. It was one of those two elections. So we're talking over a generation ago.
Right.
Was the last time that the Lyceum survey would have been a representative sample of Texas voters.
So you know, this is one poll, and let's not just, you know, spend the whole interview kind of picking on the one poll. Clearly, this poll's
okay.
Bad. But I mean, there are a lot of them. So let's kind of talk about the general concept here. I think a lot of Republican voters, after the 2016 election, look at Trump get elected. I mean, you know, you saw the New York Times or whichever one of the websites it was, 99% chance that Hillary wins. Everybody knows that Hillary's going to win. Well, you know, the 1% played out, right? So clearly all of the experts, the people who did the polling were, you know, wrong in a sense. Although people say, look, margin of error and those kind of things. But, you know, what is good polling? What does good polling look like? Like, how much of the polling that we see in the news and that people see on social media and that sort of thing being shared, how much of it is good?
You know what's interesting about that is this is one where what I'm going to say is probably going to be very controversial because it's also self-serving, candidly. And I would argue that when you see numbers released by a campaign, it is good polling. And the reason for that is the media pollster, the guy who's doing the Lyceum poll or the people who are doing the Texas Tribune polling, which is another poll that gets a lot of attention in Texas.
Right.
If they're wrong, they don't get fired. They still keep their job. If I'm wrong, I'm going to get fired. In the presidential campaign, there was a journalist, a guy named Sasha Eisenberg, who's written a great book for any of your readers who want to learn more about this process called the Victory Lab. And it's more about data and analytics and the use of it and the Obama campaign's use of it, which I spent a lot of time studying there. He's brilliant people on that who ran his data science operation and actually become good friends of mine. And I point that out to say that he wrote a piece where he looked at what we were doing in Iowa because our polling had us winning. And every other poll, any of your listeners can go to politicsandpolster.com and see that they all had Trump winning. And in fact, many of them had Marco Rubio moving into second place.
Right.
And, Senator Cruz was, he'd seen it going into the runoff between David Dewhurst and him when he was running for Senate. All the public polling had Dewhurst winning. And we had Ted winning by 15 points. And he won by 14.7, and he still wants to know where his extra 0.3 was. He was a little bit irritated about that. But we had the same sort of scenario in Iowa, where Sasha asked me, he said, well, what's going to happen if you're wrong? I said, well, I'm going to get fired tomorrow. That's what's going to happen, and I should be. Because if I'm telling somebody they're going to win and they lose, I should be fired. And that's why I would argue that when you see political pollsters release numbers, they're putting their reputation and their careers to some extent on the line. I do not have the luxury of being wrong. And that's so if you saw a survey released by and I'll just remove it from our campaigns, the ones I'm involved in, but from the O'Rourke campaign. You saw a survey released by the Lupe Valdez campaign. Those are likely good surveys. And I know there was a, for instance, there was a survey released up in the sort of the Tarrant County area district of Senator Burton by her Democrat opponent. And I saw a lot of Republicans took shots at that poll. And I'm like, you know what? I bet that poll is right, because I know the pollsters, and Keith Frederick, he's a smart guy. He's a Democrat. We may disagree on everything ideologically, but on math, we'd agree on everything. That's just ones and zeros, right? And sure enough, then there was Republican polling released that had the exact same numbers. And so I would submit that whenever you see numbers coming from a political pollster, we have our reputations on the line in a way that media pollsters do not. And you can even, whether you want to believe our polling firm or not. And the other aspect of it is, I do think there is, all political polling is not created equal, too. I would put your listeners to sleep if I were to go into this in depth. But there are little things that matter. Sure. And I'll just give you a couple of terms that I think are worth looking at. Is it RDD, random digit dialing, or is it RBS, registration-based sampling? Or is it PPS, which is the way we do all our surveys, which is proportionate probability sampling. It's a new way of sampling that's only really been developed over the last few cycles. We moved to it in about 2012. And the reason why we're able to do it in Texas, we're not able to do it everywhere, is because we actually score the voter file using a predictive model in which we score every single one of the 15.4 million registered voters in the state of Texas. And we do this on a regular basis. It starts out quarterly as we're far from election, then it moves to monthly. It's weekly now, and it'll be daily as we move past Labor Day, where every single voter is scored by us, so we know their probability of voting. And that's how we sample who is going to make it into our survey frame. And so that's why whenever I say something or give you percentages in terms of what the overall percentage that Republicans will make up of the electorate, I'm not guessing when I say 37 or 38 or 39%. I'm not guessing when I report that in my surveys. That is because I have scored people in terms of their likelihood to turn out and vote. And those who are above a 0.5 have a greater degree than 50% probability of voting. Those who are below a 0.5 have a less than 50% probability of voting. But what that also means, which is an important thing to keep in mind, if you have 10.1s in terms of score, statistically, one of those people are going to vote.
Sure.
So they all have a 10% chance of making it into our sample. So we are very systematic in terms of the way in which we build our sample. And it is that level of meticulousness that feeds into every survey we do in the state of Texas that I believe would cause all of our – that if you were to interview any of our clients, they would say, yeah, they get it right every time. And we do that because of the amount of work that goes into it.
So,
but it also we have an unfair advantage because we do so much work in Texas. I mean, we're always going to – we have over 200,000 pieces of appended first, second, and third-party data on every voter because we've scored the file so many times.
Yeah. So the big difference I'm hearing here in terms of the way you approach a poll and the way I see a lot of these public polls done is, you know, the Tribune UT poll, they do a lot of it online, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But I see, like, you know, they'll actually release the questionnaire and, like, the first question is, well, how likely are you to vote, right? And it's
right.
Just kind of, you wonder about this because there's kind of this civic pressure, you know, okay, how right. likely are you to vote? Oh, well, of course I'm going to go vote. And that could be totally untrue. So I guess the difference, a big part of the difference here is not just taking that question at face value. You're actually saying, well, how likely is this person really to vote? And trying to figure out a profile of an electorate that looks right.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's really the key thing, too, because we don't even ask that. We rate people's likelihood. And there was an interesting study that was done by a Democrat pollster. I can't pronounce his last name for you, but his first name is Massa. And he's a friend, a very brilliant guy. And he looked at all the surveys that his firm had done, Greenberg, it's GQR, it's one of the biggest firms on the Democratic side, and he kept a list of everyone who either was included in the survey because they said they were definitely going to vote, or those who were screened out of the survey because they said they definitely weren't going to vote. And that's if you look at the way, as you said, every poll that you just mentioned utilizes that same methodology of trying to determine whether or not someone votes. But the fascinating thing they found when they called those voters back is only two-thirds of those people, it was a little bit more than that, it was around 70%, of those people who said they were definitely going to vote did vote. So a third of them didn't vote after all. But the even more fascinating part is 40% of those people who said they were definitely not going to vote turned out and voted.
Yeah.
So that is that sort of illustrates the farsity of actually asking someone whether or not they're going to vote and then including them or excluding them from the survey based on their response.
Sure. Yeah, because the science will say more. Well, I think we're running out of time, but you know, for listeners out there who I guess you know who want to hire a good pollster or learn more about the work you do at WPA, where can they learn about that?
Well, WPAIntel.com, WPAIntel.com is our website, or they can just follow me on Twitter at WilsonWPA. And as you mentioned, I tweet about this about the polls as they come out pretty quickly because I am passionate about good survey research. And you also find I try and comment not just on what goes on in Texas but in other states too. So we work all over the country and frankly all over the world.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on, Chris. Thanks for shedding some light on this and appreciate your insights.
You bet. Thank you.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers program sponsored by Empower Texans? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can compete with your friends and fellow activists across the state by watching a live leaderboard, as well as seeing what others are doing across the great state of Texas. You can even earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearers logo on it, or a multitude of other prizes. For example, we just gave away an awesome custom Glock handgun. With the Texas Torchbearers program, it's even easier to make a difference. Everyone should sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S, .com.
Have you noticed the left always seems to be bullies? Well, you're right. Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us more in this week's commentary.
Obstructionism has long been the hallmark of the political left. Whether it's blocking judicial nominees or intimidating patrons to a conservative-owned business, leftists tend to be bullies. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. Modern political liberalism isn't based on philosophy or ideology. It's driven by greed. Greed for power, greed for money. Young conservatives debate into the wee hours the arguments of long-dead economists. Young liberals plot how to disrupt events and shut down debate. Same goes for the older liberals. Let me give you an example. Democrat U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York has reportedly asked for a million pages worth of documents about Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Let that sink in. A million pages. Assume it takes 30 seconds to read a page. That's 500,000 minutes. There are 1,440 minutes in a day. It would take the Democrats 347 days straight without sleep to read all the documents. These are people who have said they will unequivocally vote against him no matter what. They aren't looking to be convinced. They're looking to disrupt. The goal isn't information, it's intimidation. It's intimidation, real, threatening, physical intimidation, though, for which the political left is most known today. We've watched it unfold on college campuses across the country and even here in Texas, where conservative speakers were threatened with physical harm. The mainstream media reported without batting an eye about college buildings being set on fire and vandalized in protest of those conservative speakers. Just recently, a national jewelry chain known for its owner's philanthropic giving was threatened with protests by abortion rights activists. Why the threats? Well, the jewelry store was going to be participating in a fundraiser that helped low-income women during their pregnancies, as well as with the costs associated with early childhood for their children. It's apparently not enough for liberals to demand that women have choices. The left now wants to villainize anyone who doesn't choose to have at least one abortion. Rather than debate the merit of their ideas, the political left has devolved into a thuggish brute squad that wants to silence dissent through physical intimidation and unthinking obstruction. Their end goal isn't to change policy, though. It's to erode culture. Their goal isn't to convince people to change their minds, but to bully opponents into silence, or worse. We must stand against this indecent assault on our civil rights, or we can watch America burn. It's up to you, and it's up to me. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with a Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Before we run out of time, I wanted to give all of you listeners an action item. Go to action.empowertexans.com/Alamo. Go sign our petition to save the Alamo. Important project going on there. Well, that's all the time we have. Thanks for listening, and come back next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.